Welcome to the Nuance Mid-Cap Value Semi-Annual Conference Call. My name is Sherry, and I'll be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the call over to Paul Gillespie, Vice President and Client Portfolio Manager. Paul, you may begin.
Thanks, Sherry. Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for joining us today for our Nuance Mid-Cap Value Semi-Annual Update Call. As Sherry mentioned, this is Paul Gillespie, Vice President and Client Portfolio Manager at Nuance. In the email invitation to today's call, there was a link to a presentation that we will be referring to during the call. For any reason, if you do not have the presentation, you can email us at client.services@nuanceinvestments.com, and we will email it over. Before we begin the discussion today, I do want to let you know that this presentation may include statements regarding the intent, belief, or current expectations of our portfolio management team. Actual results may differ materially from such forward-looking statements due to a number of factors, including changes in general economic conditions, market liquidity, market volatility, and other market, financial, or governmental uncertainties. During the call today, we'll be giving an update on the firm and team. We'll also go through a summary of the investment process and updated performance. We will conclude our prepared remarks with a mid-year review and outlook of the portfolio, and then open up the call for questions. With that, I'll turn the call over to Scott Moore, our President and Chief Investment Officer. Scott?
Thanks, Paul. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining our semi-annual conference call. Today's agenda, as Paul indicated, will include a firm update, a team update, a general process summary, and, of course, a mid-year review, and we'll look forward into the future of what we're seeing as the best risk-reward opportunities in the marketplace. As Paul also mentioned, if you have any questions, there will be a Q&A session following my formal comments. Turning to page 3 of the presentation book, I will provide a brief update on the firm. As I indicated, first, a reminder that Nuance Investments is a boutique classic value investment firm with 3 distinct capacity-constrained products managed by our team. Those 3 include our first percentile risk-adjusted return since inception Nuance Concentrated Value product, our new Nuance Concentrated Long-Short product, and the product we are discussing this afternoon, of course, our Nuance Mid-Cap Value product. From an asset perspective, the overall firm has grown from a little less than $1 billion at year-end to almost $1.2 billion today, and we have seen growth in all 3 of our products. Our Nuance Mid-Cap Value product is closing, started the year, at around the mid-$100 million range, and as of today, we're nicely north of $300 million and truly appreciate the confidence and the trust that our clients are placing in us as that product has seen some very nice growth and continues as we've passed the 630 mark as well. On page 4, our investment team has remained quite stable over time. Lori Kirby and Adam West have been with us almost since the inception of Nuance back in 2008. And Chad Baumler, my co-portfolio manager and partner, has now been with us for over 2 years. The new news for our team is the addition of Darren Schreier, a CPA who we recruited out of the University of Texas's MBA program. He was involved in their investment program there, and we couldn't be happier to have Darren join the team as the 5th member of our investment team. Darren will cover the healthcare sector for us, and we are excited to add him to the fray. Chad and I are in the process of training Darren right now on our classic value investment process and, of course, the ins and outs of the healthcare space. In terms of our investment process, on page 5, as most of our regular listeners are certainly aware, this process has been in place quite a long time, and certainly since we launched Nuance in 2008, and there are no changes to that process. I know most of you, if not all of you, are aware that it would be quite the shock if I was to suggest there was a change in this investment process, which I have built a career and a firm around over a long period of time and has stood through both recessions, expansions, bubbles of various sorts, and certainly has allowed us to outperform with less risk over the long term. As a reminder, our process is designed to identify study, research, and of course, value leading business franchises across a myriad of sub-industries. We have identified about 250 of those leaders over time and have been following most of them for years and years. The typical period we are owning a company for you is when the company is under-earning its normal or mid-cycle earnings power due to a transitorily negative event or circumstance. During these sorts of periods for companies, their stocks become inexpensive and we can purchase the stock for our clients when the downside is less than the market and the upside is typically greater than the market for one of these dominant leading franchises. This combination of having a very consistent process and focusing on those businesses when they're under-earning and undervalued has led to pretty top-tier risk-adjusted returns versus benchmarks and peers over time. As you can see on page 6, to segue into performance, we continue to be pleased with the performance of your Nuance Midcap Value product. Year-to-date, we're up about 7.3% net of fees, a little behind the Russell Midcap Value Index, which is up 8.87%, but nicely ahead of the S&P 500 Index, up 3.84%. Most importantly to us and for those of you who regularly read our quarterly perspectives for this product, we are focused very largely on the longest term available to us from a return perspective. Since the inception of this product in early November of 2008, the Midcap Value Composite is up 16.39% annualized in net of fees versus the Russell Midcap Value Index, its primary benchmark, up 15.07%, and the S&P 500 Index up 13.1%. Versus our peers since inception on page 7, you can see our top decile performance versus both peer groups that we follow and track since inception. And very importantly to your team and to me specifically, if you look at the middle column of data, we are in the lowest decile or better from a risk perspective as well. Combining the total return and the risk information gets you a first percentile risk-adjusted returns since inception number. And, of course, given that the Sharpe ratio is that measure of performance, and that is a primary and has been the primary return focus of our firm, we are clearly pleased with these long-term results. So what drove the performance for the first 6 months of the year? If you will turn to page 9, first, the utility sector. Despite a general belief by myself and our team that the average utility stock is quite overvalued today, in a very yield-hungry market, our holding in the combination natural gas company, National Fuel Gas, was very helpful. We've written about this company quite a bit over the last 12 to 18 months, and we're certainly happy to see some nice-sized performance from this stock. Next, our holding in chemical company H.B. Fuller, a stock we aggressively acquired in 2015, has slowly seen returns on capital and earnings power rebound from trough levels towards normal levels. It's not quite there yet, as SAP spending as well as a large capital spending program for an acquisition done a couple of years ago are finally abating, and we're starting to get some cost absorption as well as some absorption of those assets that they spent the money on as the capital spending rolls off. So that's helping that stock quite a bit, and it's been a very good one for us over the last year or so. And then finally, I would mention our holdings in banks and other finance companies. They've been quite positive despite really very little improvement in the fundamentals of those companies. Given that they have below average returns on capital today due to historically low net interest margins, we're pretty pleased to see the positive performance in our financial stocks and particularly our banks. We believe some of the improvement in price was due to cost-cutting initiatives. Each of these companies has been very aggressive on the cost front, more so than I think we would have expected over the last couple of years. But there was also likely a bit of a chase for yield impact as well that helped these stocks outperform. BOK Financial, one of our larger holdings, Commerce Bankshares, one of our favorite regional banks, and Northern Trust have all been quite helpful for us over the first 6 months. On the negative side, I would mention two stocks. One is one of our favorites and our largest holding today, Frank's International. The second was a disappointing stock that we sold at a loss, American Sciences and Engineering. on American Sciences Engineering First. We sold our position to purchase more certain competitive positions, despite most of the security and defense-oriented peers achieving at or above their normalized returns on capital in today's market environment. The last year or two has seen American Sciences returns on capital go from reasonable levels to actually close to zero, and to the point where they actually were beginning to burn cash. In this case, the combination of a clearly uncertain competitive situation, far from clear why orders were really eroding, and a deteriorating balance sheet caused us to exit the stock, capture a long-term loss for our clients, and reinvest in more certain and more solid risk rewards. Franks International, on the other hand, maintains a pristine competitive position in our opinion. We are buyers on the weakness after a difficult first 7 months of 2016. The company really is not executing on cutting costs, particularly SG&A costs, as we expected they would naturally during the downturn that we have seen in energy spending across the board. Today, SG&A, just to give our clients a sense, is running at around $250 million annually on a trough revenue estimate of around $500 million. That is 50% of their sales, which is a very, very high number. Relative to peers, like an FTI, for example, you can even look at larger companies like Schlumberger. What you'd see is SG&A levels as low as 5 to 10%. Of trough revenues, and then the highest 20 to 30%, and then, of course, there's Franks International. The good news is that SG&A costs are a very normal reduction of expense item through troughs for high-quality energy equipment and services companies, so we have some very serious expectations that those costs will be accelerated over the next couple of quarters. As you all might imagine, we talk to Franks International's management team quite regularly, and I believe it's fair to say that we're on the same page in terms of what needs to be done here over the next few quarters as we continue to navigate through the trough of Franks International's profit cycle. On page 10, we transition to the future. First, Franks is our favorite risk reward, and while we are not pleased with the recent execution, and as I indicated, we are in touch with them regularly, and we like the future quite a bit. Don't disregard or forget that this company has almost $3 of net cash per share on the balance sheet. We're expecting them to do some accretive acquisitions. We expect them to do the cost savings that would accelerate the EBITDA going back our way. And, of course, longer term, as the cycle becomes more normalized, we expect the earnings power to improve quite substantially from today's levels, and the stock, we believe, is worth significantly more than it is today. We also continue to like Select Financials. Not only have we held on to the BOK Financial, the Commerce Bank shares, and the Northern Trust, the recent Brexit fears that I believe everyone read about in the newspaper and certainly saw, which ultimately dropped the 10-year Treasury yield to roughly 2012 levels of 1.3 to 1.4% from the high ones, actually gave us a very short window to add to our holdings of Charles Schwab and MetLife, a couple of businesses that we have bought and sold for our clients over the years. Each of these businesses is under-earning their potential due largely to historically, I'll call it, awkward interest rates, and whether it's through cost savings or a little bit of natural relief in these incredibly low rates, we think the future from here for these companies looks very good. Lastly, we like Select Industrial Companies within the agriculture and trucking areas. Both of these areas are showing under-earnings of some of the best franchises that we track due to what I would call overspending cycles. In agriculture, a multi-year overspending cycle that ended about 2 years ago has caused farmers to spend below average levels of capital on agricultural equipment. So companies like Lindsay Corporation and Deere Corporation look very attractive. And then really more recently for us, we've gotten involved in the trucking industry as a very large capital spending program for many truckers. Buying too many trucks has led to excess capacity and pricing problems. These two situations are very classic to what we do here at Nuance. There is a cyclical one-off issue that is causing these businesses to earn close to their trough returns on capital due to very normal supply and demand issues that ebb and flow over time. In these cases, we can buy these best-of-breed businesses like Lindsay, Deere, Heartland Express, and a company called Hub Group at very attractive valuations, very limited downside, and we think significant upside as these cycles should abate over the next year or two. I would note that a common thread amongst these ideas that I'm mentioning are very strong balance sheets. Franks International has, as I mentioned, $3 of net cash per share. The financial stocks we own have very strong balance sheets versus their peers, and most are quite improved versus the levels of 2007 and 2008. Think of it as the pre-financial crisis leverage numbers. Lindsay Corporation, as an example, is basically debt-free. Heartland, as an example, is basically debt-free. It's interesting to note that in a world where we are seeing a lot more leverage across many spaces, some of the best opportunities out there are in the least financially risky companies. So we really enjoy and like that risk-reward combination, or are pretty excited about the financial quality of the businesses we've been adding to your portfolio over the last roughly 6 to 12 months. So what are we avoiding and what are we underweighting? As you can see again on that page, REITs and utilities. Basically, we are back to 2012 interest rate levels, as I mentioned just a minute ago, as well as valuation levels, and frankly, the risk rewards of both of those spaces are simply terrible. I'm not really sure I can call it anything except that. As one example, Consolidated Edison, the old New York-based Con Ed. I've been following the business for a very long time. Our view is the business has about $4 of normal earnings per share. The stock's trading at about $80. That's 20 times earnings for a 4x debt-to-EBITDA balance sheet and only very modest growth potential over time. I can just tell you that in my humble opinion, that is a very poor risk-reward. Just contrasting that with the aforementioned BOK Financial, both businesses historically earn 10 to 13% returns on equity on normal balance sheets. Both businesses historically have been valued at around 12 to 15 times PE multiples. Today, Con Ed is at 20 times, as I mentioned. BOKF is at 11.5 times. Very significant differences between those two groups of companies. One incredibly loved as a yield play and a theoretical safe play, and the other being ignored because of historically low net interest margins. We know which one we want to own and which one we don't. Clearly, we do not own ED, and clearly we own BOKF. A very classic example of what we're trying to do for our clients' portfolios over time, and we really love the dichotomy of those risk rewards between those two spaces. Lastly, we note we are also underweight the consumer and general discretionary stocks. We've been underweight in and continue to be on difficult competitive positions due to online retailing, shopping shifts, as well as the classic brand unsustainability within that discretionary space. But also I would mention that in general, we're underweight consumer staples due to valuation and leverage concerns. That space has grown its debt to EBITDA to historically high levels. They have raised their dividend payout ratios as a group to close to historically high levels, and as such, because of the yield-hungry marketplace, we are seeing valuations at very near historically high levels. So we're not finding opportunities in the consumer world, so we're going to be not buoyed. We may find an opportunity or two, but we're certainly going to be underweight in those spaces in general. In some, opportunities are narrower. Today, due to late economic and valuation cycle characteristics, but our portfolio is still full of leading business franchises with excellent balance sheets, very good competitive positions, and solid valuation support. I will tell you that that narrowing has led us to raise our cash position to about 9% of the portfolio, which is higher than it was at year-end. Our overall risk-reward for your portfolio, many of our clients will ask us from time to time, statistically, what does that look like versus the broader nuanced market, our list of 250 leaders that we track. And today, our portfolio has about 20% upside with downside of in the neighborhood of 25% versus the broader nuanced market, that broad list of 250 companies that has 15% downside to fair value and 50% downside if we were to have a recession. So as you would expect, our portfolio has a better risk reward than that of the broader nuanced market. And, of course, that is consistent with what we will always have over time, and it's the nature of our process that leads us to where those good risk rewards are. Lastly, I would also steer our clients to our June perspectives commentary as it relates to the degree of debt in the market today in non-financial stocks. And I would remind you that your portfolio has significantly stronger balance sheets than the market today, which is normal for us, but I believe more important than normal in today's market, given the latter stages of the economic and valuation cycle and the degree to which debt has creeped back in to many, many companies in the non-finance space over the last year or two. With that, that concludes my formal remarks, and I will open up to any questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star and then one on your touch-tone phone. To remove yourself from the queue, you can press the pound or hash key. If you're using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing any numbers. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and then one on your touch-tone phone. Standing by for questions. And then at this time, I'm showing no questions in the audio queue.
Well, I want to thank everyone for joining us today. If you do have an additional question, you can send us an email at client.services@nuanceinvestments.com, and we're happy to answer it. And thank you for joining us today. For more information about Nuance and to stay up to date on our products, please visit our website and connect with us on LinkedIn and Twitter. Thanks again.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.